artist George Lee is just 21 years old. His name may be familiar, though, because just 2 years ago, he took home the silver medal at the International Tchaikovsky Competition in Moscow. He returned to Russia not too long ago to make his very first recording live at the Mariinsky. I'm Julie Amacher. That's this week's episode of New Classical Tracks. Enjoy. George, some of your recent reviews include phrases like staggering technical prowess and a sense of command and depth of expression. Fearless and breathtaking virtuosity and natural grace. Now, these kind of phrases and critiques are often for, well, let's be honest, musicians and performers who have been doing this a long time, and you're 21 years old. How, at your young age, have you developed such a passionate way of performing music?
Well, for me, it's always such a big honor to be described in that way. And I mean, personally, I always just try to be as real to like the music as much as I can. I spend a lot of time just experimenting with different things on the keyboard, studying the score, sometimes learning about the background of the piece and the historical elements, which help in some way, as well as like theoretical things to kind of keep me grounded in structure. And so I pay attention to all these things, while at the same time, when it comes to the performance, I try to kind of throw it all out there and just try to embody the music as much as possible and to just be myself, whatever that means, but yeah, to kind of find myself.
So I guess maybe that gets to, what is your goal as a musician?
Yeah, I mean, as a performer, I think it's a responsibility to really trust in the composer and to kind of really pay attention to all those details that he leaves behind in the music, and to kind of convey and try to figure out what he's trying to say in that piece, specific piece. But at the same time, we're also recreating the piece and interpreting the piece. We bring it to life by playing the music. So I think there's always that kind of balance. In the end, we're all ambassadors for music, here to kind of bring joy, but also heal ourselves and maybe the audience as well.
Well, I guess that is a wonderful segue into the recording itself, which I think you actually described it as a journey down to hell and back up again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one way of putting it. I thought about that because although it has so many styles with classical, romantic, and post-romantic with Rachmaninoff and a little bit of Liszt, there's just so many stylistic differences. But also throughout the program, I really felt that there was kind of like an emotional journey to be said and to be told. It didn't necessarily have to be a specific storyline, but I felt that at least for me, each piece kind of flowed naturally into the next, from the Haydn, which has this wittiness and humor. But also is tinged with that B minor tragic sound. Which flows really well into the Funeral March, which is grand, dramatic, mournful and tragic in the third movement especially. Fourth movement just haunting and chilling. But also just breathless, agitated. That linking right into the Rachmaninoff, which is filled with darkness. And then finally, with the consolation being like a very healing kind of almost resurrection. And then to the festivities of the Rhapsody. I felt like there was a big kind of overarching flow to it that linked each piece together.
The B minor sonata by Haydn. Now, that's kind of unusual for him to write in that key. Do you know why he chose the key of B minor for that sonata?
I'm not sure why that... I don't know why he would choose that key, but for me, I just feel like each key brings its own color and that it really fits this piece well, especially with the first movement, which has this kind of elegance to it. There's a lot of finesse and nuance. But again, you have the beginning, which is the first two measures, where you have this kind of prickly, pungent kind of sound, which contrasts so much with the latter two measures. With like the linear, mellifluous kind of sounds. So you have this very elegant and witty kind of Haydn, as I was saying, but it's also tinged with this sadness.
The Chopin Piano Sonata, which follows number 2 in B-flat minor, it includes that famous funeral march, which is the third movement. As I was listening, I thought to myself, you know, I always forget about that beautiful little lullaby section in there. It just gave me a whole new perspective on it, certainly the way that you presented it as well.
Oh, thanks. I think just the juxtaposition between that very somber, mournful, repetitive kind of nature of the funeral march with the heavenly, sublime kind of beauty that's presented, almost naive, but also just very simple beauty. And I think just the combination of the two just really highlights the extremes and makes that whole movement all the more like touching and moving. And the fourth movement, that fourth movement especially just conveys that really haunting wind imagery over a graveyard, and you really see it as well as hear it.
The Rachmaninoff variations on a theme of Corelli are filled with 20 variations that shifts from mood to mood in each one. It's almost like having 20 different conversations with 20 different people. I would think that would be kind of exhausting to shift moods like that. How do you manage all those different moods in this piece?
I think that is part of the trickiness in the work, just having so many different like personalities, as you say, and all out of this very simple but very hauntingly beautiful Corelli or La Folia theme. It's just so amazing how well he's able to kind of just shift from one to the next almost seamlessly. Rachmaninoff is just able to convey like different stories with each variation. There's multiple kinds of climaxes in each section, each one building to the next. For me, there's almost like a certain series of movements where the first one goes right until like the intermezzo, and then the intermezzo all the way to the end of the D flat major section, which Ashkenazi called the island of warmth and joy, surrounded by an ocean of darkness. Liked, and I really thought was true of this piece. And then the third and final part, which is the coda all the way until the last codetta, which is just this achingly beautiful but also filled with despair. Yeah, it's just such a great work for me. And I, when I heard it played 3-4 years ago, I really felt like I wanted to learn this. And so here I am playing it.
The list, and you kind of explained why you chose these different pieces, and it is a really flashy way to end the recital, that's for sure, the Hungarian Rhapsody number 2. I can't help but see Bugs Bunny. I don't know. Do you know who Bugs Bunny is?
Yes, of course. Yeah, and yeah, it is so difficult when you get to that frisca and get to those moments where, and you can't get that like image out of your head. And maybe it's good that it is, because it is so joyful and so festive, and you kind of feel that comic personalities and colors.
Now, you have won so many awards already. The Gilmore Young Artist Award, the silver medal winner at the International Tchaikovsky Competition in Moscow, the Avery Fisher Career Grant. That's huge, isn't it, for a 21-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, I'm, again, just so honored and privileged to be able to say that I have won these awards. And each one has been so beneficial to me, and the people behind the organization have all, like, encouraged me and given me great advice into, like, how to go from here. And it's just been such an amazing support system, and I'm just very grateful to have these awards.
What kind of advice have you been given?
Just
that you're thinking of actually acting on.
No, I mean, just how I should pace myself and to enjoy myself while I'm also going through this very fulfilling but also very difficult way of managing my life with concerts and with school and things like that, but just to also just be myself and let things go and see how it goes.
So you're currently in the Harvard University New England Conservatory joint program, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And are you, I know you're, obviously you're studying piano there. Are you also taking a literature course or doing some other things?
Yeah, actually at Harvard, I'm currently concentrating in English literature, and I'm in my senior year. So I'm just taking a bunch of English classes, but I'm also taking quite a few music classes as well.
And there is definitely a relationship there between literature and music that I think you're probably, you know, finding ways to explore the emotions in both aspects, right?
Right, for sure. I mean, when I first entered the university, I really didn't know what I was going to study. And by second year, I ran into the English department and I started taking courses there. And I think over the past 2 or 3 years, it's made me realize how closely connected they are. And just whether it be kind of literally with pieces being influenced by major literature writers and works, but also just being able to kind of analyze and understand literature, which is in a way like another form, different form of music, where you kind of convey expressions and thoughts and emotions through words. Being able to kind of internalize that has really helped me kind of understand music on a much deeper level. And so I'm very grateful to be able to sort of bring these two together in some way.
Well, and certainly there's plenty of classical pieces that have been inspired by literature. Are there any that you have worked on that you found as you've been studying literature, have, you know, that these two have converged?
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny because last spring I was working on the Petrarchan sonnets by Liszt, and at the same time, miraculously, I was also in English just studying the Petrarchan sonnets, and being able to kind of go through that process of analyzing both or studying both at the same time was just really rewarding for me. And yeah, it was something special for sure.
I know that as a teenager, you had a pretty cathartic experience when you performed a Beethoven concerto with an orchestra. Tell me about that first experience and how it was such an epiphany for you.
Yeah, I mean, beforehand, like when I was young, I mean, I really loved music and I loved the piano especially, but I don't think I really felt the power of music until that point, because I thought of it more as like a hobby. I was really interested in it, and for me, getting on a week-to-week basis, kind of overcoming each challenge, was something that was very fulfilling to me. But I guess emotionally, I wasn't really connecting as much. But then when I went and played, it was like a community orchestra, and we played the Beethoven First Concerto. And I don't know, but all of a sudden, like, something changed within me, and I kind of felt during the performance just some sort of unity between myself, the orchestra, and the score, and as well as the audience. And I just felt like different. I felt like I was elsewhere making music and having so much joy, and like, I guess, yeah, joy and that feeling of bliss that kind of fills your heart. And it was just such an amazing moment. And after that, I kind of realized that how powerful music can potentially be. And I always wanted to kind of get back to that moment and to keep playing music.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode featuring pianist George Lee. Next time, you'll hear from the members of the Danish String Quartet, who share Nordic folk music and a few pieces inspired by Nordic Christmas songs on their brand new recording. It's called Last Leaf. I'm Julie Amacher. Thank you.